Bills Radio Network Sports Update.
The update from One Bills Drive Board is pretty quiet, but there's action around the NFL on coaching moves. Los Angeles Rams quarterbacks coach Zach Taylor is said to be the Bengals' top choice as their next head coach, according to ESPN. They would like to hire Taylor after the Rams' season ends. The Rams still in the playoffs, so they cannot negotiate a contract yet. Zach Taylor, just 35 years old. He was offensive coordinator for the University of Cincinnati in 2016, and sources say he wants to return there. Some of the other moves on coaches around the NFL. The Baltimore Ravens have promoted Greg Roman to replace Marty Morningwick as offensive coordinator. That's a significant move in the development of quarterback Lamar Jackson. Roman, this is his third offensive coordinator job. He had the role under Jim Harbaugh in San Francisco and then came here to Buffalo for a little bit more than a year. Around the NFL, the Arizona Cardinals have announced the hiring of Vance Joseph, just released as the Denver Broncos head coach, as Arizona's new defensive coordinator. Steve Sarkisian closing in on the offensive coordinator job, it's said to be with the Arizona Cardinals. And the Jets talking with Greg Williams, apparently, today about their vacancy at defensive coordinator. Antonio Brown is not going to be released by the Pittsburgh Steelers, but Steelers owner and president Art Rooney says all options are on the table. He said it'd be hard to envision Brown as part of the team when they report to training camp in July. Meantime, four games this weekend as the divisional playoffs take center stage. Starts tomorrow, 4:35 p.m., Indianapolis at Kansas City in the AFC. The night game tomorrow, 8:15 p.m., Dallas and the Los Angeles Rams on Sunday. 1:05 p.m. kickoff, AFC, the Chargers at New England, followed by the Eagles at New Orleans at 4:40 p.m. Hockey now. The Buffalo Sabres get Jack Eichel back in the lineup tonight against the Carolina Hurricanes. He's missed the last three Sabres games with an injury, an undisclosed upper body injury. The upper body has healed enough so that he can play tonight against Carolina. Jeff Skinner returns to Carolina for that game tonight. Skinner just named to the All-Star game and the NHL All-Star last men in. He's one of three named to the NHL All-Star game. Plus a couple of college basketball games tonight. Canisius plays Ryder tonight, 7 o'clock at the Kessler Center. And Niagara home against Iona. I'll be going to the Canisius game tonight, Steve.
Very nice.
Yep, looking forward to
good
it.
Good for you. Congratulations.
I think I'll have fun.
I'm still waiting for my invitation.
We'll get you there. There's only been a couple of games. Right. Joining us right now on the Subway Fresh Take Hotline, happy to have native Western New Yorker who knows all about Niagara, Canisius, and those teams, Daryl Johnston, the Moose, NFL on Fox analyst, 11 seasons in the NFL, and the current general manager of the San Antonio Commanders of the Alliance of American Football. Moose, I'm guessing young Moose in Youngstown probably went to a couple of Niagara Purple Eagle games when you were a youngster, huh?
Yes, yes. Actually, the one I remember was when Syracuse came to play. I got to see Roosevelt Bowie.
Oh, yeah.
Come in and play, yeah. And that one stands out.
That was enough to get you to commit to Syracuse, right?
Yeah, right. Yeah. Who would have known years later down the road?
Yeah. Right. Tell us, I know you're probably eyeballs deep in the AAF. I'm sorry. You were at practice yesterday. Give us a little synopsis, a thumbnail of the San Antonio Commanders.
It's been good. It's been really good. I think that people are going to be very surprised and impressed by the quality of football that we're going to put out there on the field. So the cool thing about it is the allocation process to get our guys. We've got a lot of Texas ties on our roster. Now, we also have some guys from the East Coast, Upper Midwest, and West Coast. But for the majority of our roster, they know about each other, or they do know each other, have competed against each other, you know, in high school and even college. So the chemistry of the team has come together very quickly. We've been very impressed with that component of it, and I think that's something that's very important. So we're going to be talented, but the chemistry thing is the thing that we're really trying to focus on and work on. And I've seen teams that are very talented not reach the potential that they've had. And then I've seen teams that maybe don't have the talent level. Some of the other teams just gel really well together and get on some great runs. So we're trying to balance both of those and create both of those. And we've been very impressed with the guys so far through the first 6 days of practice.
Well, talk to me a little bit about your head coach, Mike Riley. Obviously, a name that a lot of people in football know about. What kind of philosophy is he going to have when you guys take the field on opening day against the San Diego Fleet?
Mike is awesome, and it's funny because when everybody heard and the news broke that Mike and I would be working together in San Antonio as head coach and GM, I got multiple phone calls from people in the NFL who I really, really respect, and they said, "You're going to enjoy this. Mike is one of the nicest guys in football." And he hates to hear that because he wants to be considered kind of the drill sergeant, but he creates such a great demeanor at practice, in the meeting room, his messaging. It's firm. He is a great guy. He is a nice guy. He's not a yeller. He's not a screamer. But he's very firm. He holds the guys accountable. You know, the mental part of the game is very important in the teaching process. He's assembled a great staff. Our offensive line coach is outstanding. Our wide receiver coach is phenomenal. We've got Bill Bradley working with our corners. We've got Jim Grobe coordinating the defense. So we've got names that are out there. And then we've got a lot of youth sprinkled in, too, that bring some of the new ideas from the college game. So we will be running, you know, some of the RPO stuff that you see. But one of the things that I've learned about Mike is when he was down here in San Antonio with the Riders back in the early 90s, he used to come up to training camp in Austin, Texas, when we were playing, you know, back in the early 90s. And he was a big fan of North Turner. They got to be good friends. So there's a foundational base of the offense that I was a part of with the Dallas Cowboys. So we're going to have a nice mix of pro style, a little bit of some of the things that the colleges are sprinkling in now with some of the spread sets, and then also the RPO element. So we're going to challenge defenses to be able to defend a lot of different things.
We're on the line with Daryl Moose Johnson from the NFL on Fox, Youngstown, New York native, and currently the general manager of the Alliance of American Football San Antonio Commanders. A couple of familiar names, one of them former Bills draft pick Cyril Richardson. Was he drafted by your team? He's an offensive lineman from Baylor, isn't he, Moose?
Yes, he was one of the allocated guys via Baylor. So we were able to get Cyril. He's by far one of the biggest guys on our offensive line. One of the things that we are very blessed with is the fact that our offensive line is very big, very physical across the front. Probably our number one guy, a little bit of veteran leadership, is Andrew McDonald, who had a nice 4-year career in the NFL, was with the Chiefs the last time. So he came to us via the Kansas City allocation from an unallocated school, but with a professional allocation. And he's been outstanding. He'll be our right tackle. Mo Porter's another guy who spent some time in the NFL. He's going to be our left tackle. So we've got a lot of experience in the front line, and they're kind of cut from the same cloth. They're all big guys. We got our Polynesian power with some of the Tongan Samoans. So we're really looking forward to see what that starting five is able to do during the season.
You lost your kicker, right? The Chargers just signed your kicker this week, right?
Yeah. Nick Rose was called on Wednesday night by the San Diego Chargers, and he jumped in the car and drove up to Austin and then flew out early Thursday morning to join the San Diego Chargers as they get ready to head up to Gillette for the playoff game against the Patriots. We've actually got three of our guys on the San Diego Chargers. So we've got two guys on the practice squad, but Nick is actually going to be out on the field kicking off for the San Diego Chargers. So we're real excited for him.
How does that work with, if you've got guys on practice squads, they do not come and play for you, correct? They stay where they're at, or in the off season, are they going to come in and you're going to put them on the field?
It's all based on kind of the calendar. So anybody that was on a practice squad, towards the end of the year, if they were released prior to December 28th, they could come right to us. But if they were on that practice squad roster on December 29th, the last game day of the NFL season, then we had to wait all the way through till January 6th before we could sign them back. And now once the playoff teams finish, they'll finish on a Saturday or a Sunday. We have to wait all the way till that following Monday before we can bring them back to join us. So we'd love to have Tyrone Holmes and Justice Liggins, who are the other two guys that we have out in San Diego, but I'm cheering for Phillip Rivers in the playoffs this year. Sure. I'd love to see Phillip get the opportunity to experience the Super Bowl.
Well, we'd be remiss if we didn't ask you about your level of interest in the Cowboys going out to L.A. and playing the Rams. What do you see in that game about what the Cowboys' chances are to go on the road in the playoffs and beat the number one seed or the number two seed?
I think there's a strong possibility they can do it, and I think you need to go back to what Seattle did earlier in the season. They lost the game at home, but they played the same style that Dallas is going to play, and it's a style that I feel that the Rams have struggled with all season. I think they're the worst rushing defense in the NFL, if not by total yardage, then yards per carry, and that's what Seattle did to them. Now, the Seattle defense at the time was starting to come together. They were probably better than people thought, but they were not at the level that Dallas is at right now. So I think when you take the running game and the offensive line of the Dallas Cowboys, put that up against a front that really likes to rush the passer and doesn't really like to defend the run, I think that's a matchup that Dallas should be able to win. And now if the defense can keep control of the Rams offense and make this a tight game where that Rams defensive line can't pin their ears back and just rush the passer, that plays into the style that Dallas wants to establish. So I think if you go back and watch that Seattle game from earlier in the year, I think that's exactly what you're going to see from the Dallas Cowboys. And the big X factor in this, when Seattle did it, Russell played really well at the quarterback position. Dak Prescott is playing really well at the quarterback position right now. I thought it was awesome that Jason Garrett, you know, played him the entire game, that final game of the season against the Giants. He was able to get a victory in a dramatic fashion. That is huge for his confidence. I think it carried over into Seattle in the wild card round. I think it's going to carry over to the Rams in the divisional round. And I fully expect the Cowboys to be in the championship game next Sunday.
Wow. You know, I was thinking about Dak Prescott. And I want to ask you, I mean, fourth round pick, I believe, right, Moose? And in these last week, this week, these are the most important, maybe the first big important games of his career. So far, he's answered the bell, right? He answered the call last week.
I think he did. I really do. And the big thing with Dak right now, you know, he was a fourth-round draft pick for a reason. You know, there's still some things in his game that he has to work on. And we've kind of gone back to that Giants game and kind of looked at that last drive. And this is where you can see the areas that he can improve and grow in. An incredible throw on the run on fourth and 15 to win that game. But if you go back two plays earlier on a double move to Amari Cooper on the outside, he's got him wide open for a touchdown. And it's a horrible throw. I mean, he almost throws the ball out of bounds. So that is the inconsistency that Dak is working against right now. So as he continues to grow and mature and build that consistency, I think he becomes a much better player. But I do believe that experience that he had in that Giants game is the thing that has springboarded him to the performance against the Seahawks. The run on the third and long situation at the end of the game was vintage Dak Prescott. I think he built more confidence in that game. So you have a very confident young quarterback going into a game, and the offensive game plan should be built around their strengths, which is something that the Rams struggle with. So there is every possibility for him to have a really good game against the Rams.
I know we're down the road a little bit from the mid-season strife that was going on, and every year it seems as though Jason Garrett seems to be on the hot seat, and Dallas fans have very little patience for a team that goes through the dips and swoons and a roller coaster of a regular season. But once again, I mean, Jason Garrett has pulled things together and got this team playing really well at the end of the season. He's a former teammate of yours. What are your thoughts on him and his tenure as head coach of the Cowboys?
I think he's done a really good job. It's a unique environment to navigate when you talk about the dynamic with the Dallas Cowboys. And I don't think anybody's done it better than Jason Garrett. So, you know, I think he needs to be applauded in that situation. I think the Dallas media, the Dallas fan base, sometimes gets frustrated with him. Because he's not that emotional guy. He's not going to throw you out, you know, some statement that you're going to be able to put in the headlines. You know, he doesn't handle the media the way Bill Parcells does. He's not one of those gregarious coaches. He's very methodical in his approach, you know, to the point where sometimes it seems boring. But boring is good in the NFL. And Jason Garrett does not allow the media to take something he has said and create an issue out of it and use it to divide the team or distract the team or create some type of adversity that's manufactured. So that's what's frustrating to them, but that's the beauty of his style. And he talks about the process, and that's exactly what this team did going from 3-5 to 10-6. So I think he was validated with his approach. I hope that people understand that that's just who Jason Garrett is. And there's nothing wrong with a guy who gets you to the playoffs. And I know it's been an up and down year, and you know they, a lot of people talk about the 500 record and 8-8 seasons. But now that they've got things rolling, they've got that wide receiver position kind of sorted out, and everybody knows their roles right now. This is a dangerous team in the playoffs.
And I think one of the things, too, and you can speak to this as well, a lot of people outside of Dallas and maybe some inside Dallas kind of look at their owner, Jerry Jones, as being a guy that, you know, is a little bit different. Well, he's different than every other owner. He's fully engaged in the team and how it runs and operates, and he's the acting general manager. And Jason Garrett has done a wonderful job managing that relationship, his relationship with Jerry Jones as well. And I, for one, maybe I'm one of the few, I got a lot of respect for Jerry Jones and what he's been able to do as owner of the Cowboys. But isn't job one for Jason Garrett handling that relationship as well as coaching football?
Yeah, that's what I mean. When it's a unique situation, and he's navigated it as well as anybody could expect. You know, there's been a lot of coaches, you know, in Jerry Jones's tenure as owner of the Dallas Cowboys. And I really feel that the relationship, and it does become, you know, a key part in the relationship is the fact that Jason was a player for Jerry at one point, was part of Super Bowl teams. So there's the connection there. But the way that, they work together, the way that, Jason understands the dynamic and, works with it, works through it, works around it, I think is a credit to him. The big thing is right now they don't really have anything to show for it. I mean, you hear all these statistics that are out there, and they are warranted. They have not had playoff success, since our team in 1995. I heard one last year that was actually shocking. You know, the Jacksonville Jaguars have been to three AFC championship games since 1995. The Dallas Cowboys have not been to the NFC championship Wow. game. You know, that's shocking. You know, that is not good. We can talk about the positives, but this is a result-driven league. So for Jason Garrett to really get into a comfortable position and to really be embraced by the fan base, he needs to have a good playoff push this year, and that's what I think is going to happen. I really do think they're going to handle business tomorrow night, and they'll be in the NFC Championship game next weekend.
Moose, I got one more for you, and it deals with the atmosphere that you expect in Los Angeles tomorrow. I saw Steve and I were talking about it yesterday, an estimate that 93,000 seats in the Coliseum and maybe 50,000 of those will be filled by Cowboys fans tomorrow night. Is that possible?
Absolutely. Remember, Thousand Oaks was the home base of the training camp out there. We have a huge fan base in Southern California. The only time that we struggle outnumbering the home team on the West Coast is when the Raiders were playing at the Coliseum. Because the Raiders have a tremendous fan base, all the way through the state of California, and they got a lot of people that were traveling down from the Bay Area, to Southern California for the games in the Coliseum. But when we go out there and play anybody but the Raiders, that's essentially another Dallas home Wow. game. They spent a number of years out there in Thousand Oaks. My rookie season was the last year that we held training camp in Thousand Oaks, California, and that was over two decades out there. So the Cowboy fan base is strong in Southern Cal. I'd be surprised if it was only 50,000. I think you may see a little bit more. I think we might get to a 60-40.
Wow. There you go.
Hey, Moose, thanks for this. Congratulations on the Alliance of American Football team. We'll be following the Commanders and the rest of the teams in that league. Thanks for spending a few minutes with us here today.
Oh, no, my pleasure. Always good to touch base. Thanks, John. Thanks, Steve.
All right, man.
Darryl Moose Johnson, NFL on Fox analyst, 11 seasons in the league with the Cowboys, general manager of the San Antonio Commanders of the Alliance of American Football League. He joined us on the Subway Fresh Take Hotline presented by Subway Restaurants, proud to be locally owned and operated.
I might have to rethink my position on the home field thing with the Raiders. He was pretty adamant that,
yeah.
And he's, obviously more he played 50, out there. 000. And I remember, too, we used to play in the Coliseum against the Raiders. My whole career, the Raiders were the Los Angeles Raiders, not the Oakland Raiders, and they had a real strong following. But he's right. He played out there with the Cowboys and has probably seen it time and time again over the years that when you go out there, there's still a ton of people, a big generation of people who remember the Cowboys going to Thousand Oaks and having their training camp there. So maybe it is going to be a wild scene out there full of Cowboy fans. He says there's going to be. I kind of poo-pooed it when I heard about it. I was like, I've heard that before. It's not like StubHub Center and the Chargers. But maybe it will be, only a bigger version.
Yeah, much bigger.
Much bigger.
Hey, we want to get you involved in our topic of the day as we talk about the playoff games this weekend. We've had this up on Twitter for a couple of hours. We haven't checked it in a while, though. Which upset are you predicting? Which road team is what I'm looking at?
There you go.
Which road team has the best chance of pulling off an upset? Is it, in fact, the Cowboys? On Twitter, 53% of you now say it's the Chargers at New England who have the best chance of pulling off an upset. 33% of you say it's the Colts, and the Indianapolis Colts go to Kansas City, and you think they have the best chance. That's the first game tomorrow, about 4:30. 10% say the Eagles at the Saints, and only 4% give the Cowboys a chance to pull off the upset. That seems low when you talk to Moose Johnson, and he certainly was pretty confident about the Cowboys' chances, right? I mean, yeah. They're not going to be embarrassed, I wouldn't think, by the Rams.
Does your opinion about these games go kind of follow the percentages as well? Kind of your opinion about which road team is going to go in and win the chances?
Yes.
See, I would flip the Colts and Chargers, like I said.
I would flip the Eagles and Cowboys, but
would you? You'd give the Cowboys a better chance of beating the Rams than the Eagles going down there. Yeah,
yes.
You know what? You're probably right as well. I think it goes. I think for me, it goes. I think it goes. Colts, Chargers, Eagles, Cowboys.
Okay.
In that order of a probability of winning on the road.
Yeah.
No. Yes, Eagles, Cowboys. I think Cowboys have the least chance of anybody going on the road and winning out in L.A.
Well, if you're listening,
no, that's not true. I got that wrong. I think it's the Eagles. The Eagles and Cowboys should be flipped as well. Yeah, you're right. So there you go.
I think we got a caller on the line who wants to talk about the Cowboys. Sean in Florida, are you still there, Sean?
Yes.
Hi, Sean. What do you think?
Hey. Anyways, it's a great show so far. I love hearing you guys.
And, thanks.
Feel like the Cowboys are really going to pull it out. Just how their formula of winning, how they play on defense. How the Rams just got demolished by the Bears. I don't know. It's more of a gut feeling than anything, but I know it's kind of jumping on the bandwagon, too, of all the callers, but I don't know. It's just that's how I feel with them. But anyways, I also wanted to ask a question on if the Patriots do end up winning, which I, as a Bills fan, I really hope they don't, is this the best defense they'll play, the Chargers? Would this be the best defense?
I would say it may be. I'd say it might be the best defense left of the eight teams. Yeah, the Charger defense because of their pass rush. Now, I don't know. The Rams defense is pretty formidable as well, but they don't like to stop the run, mostly because they don't work at it. But I think with 2 weeks rest and knowing that it's a do-or-die situation for the team, you can bet that the Rams are going to step up front. Aaron Donald doesn't like to stop the run. Ndamukong Suh is not known for having his nose on the grindstone all the time unless it's a third and long. So I think the Rams, you can bet their defense will be up to stopping the run just because they know now it's the playoffs and it really matters. And if they don't play well, they're going to lose. So you can bet that I think you're getting an uptick in what the Rams didn't do well up front, because mostly, in my estimation, their lack of the ability to stop the run starts with their lack of desire to stop the run, because they want to get after the passer. In the playoffs, you want to do it all well, and I think that'll be a difference for the Rams. So, but having said that, I think the Chargers probably do have the best defense left in the group, and if the Patriots get by them, and if the Colts beat the Chiefs, well, you know, they've got another championship game in Foxborough, and it looks like the Patriots are going to go to the Super Bowl again. So there's that.
I was just looking over some of the numbers, and I just would offer this caution. Don't overlook Indianapolis defense. They are just slightly behind the Chargers in terms of the number of yards given up per game. That's the traditional way to analyze a defense, right? Not necessarily the best way, but
right.
The traditional way. The last 11 games, the Colts have allowed their opponents just 15.5 points per game. The first six games, their opponents scored 30 points per game. So they cut the number of points allowed in half, and they cut their yardage way down. The Colts defense has played here's an interesting stat about the Colts defense. Over their last 11 games, including last week, the Colts have held opponents to 20 points or fewer six times. And in five of the first six they played this year, their opponents got more than 20 points. The Colts are playing good defense now is the point I'm trying to make.
Yeah, no question.
But I do think the Chargers is the best defense out there right now that the Patriots will face.
Well, by the rankings, the Colts are let's see. The Colts are – what am I looking for here? Yeah, they're number 11 overall.
Not bad.
Defensively. So, yeah, that's a pretty good number. But the Chargers are number 9 overall. So, there's not much difference.
Right. All right, we're going to take a break. We're going to come back and do NFL True and False. We want to hear more from you about which road team has the best chance at an upset this weekend. Whatever's on your mind about the Bills and the NFL, we got more time to talk about it. Come on back. One Bills Live, presented by Kalata Health from One Bills Drive. This is Buffalo Bills Radio. Welcome back. John Murphy, Steve Tasker, One Bills Live from One Bills Drive. About 30 minutes left on our show today. That's all the time you have if you want to get in some thoughts on this weekend's playoff games, the divisional round. Four games, two tomorrow, two on Sunday. We went to the break talking about the defensive rankings of the teams, the eight teams left, and Steve has done a little more research on that.
Yeah, Dallas has got the top-ranked defense statistically. They're number 7 overall. The next one to them is the Chargers that we were talking about is playing so well, and then the Colts at number 11. So it goes Dallas number 7, Chargers number 9, and Colts number 11. So those three are the teams that are, you know, the top-rated defenses in the playoffs. Now, after that, you go down to, you know, New Orleans, and then the Rams, New England, Philly, and Kansas City. So it goes down from there. Now, offensively, it's interesting because you only had two teams ranked in the top 10 defensively in the playoffs. That's Dallas and the Chargers. In offense, you've got 1, 2, 3, 4, five of the eight teams ranked in the top 10. Kansas City's number 1. Rams are number 2. New England is number 5. The Colts are number 7. New Orleans are number 8.
So, Steve.
And the Chargers are number 11.
Which
so
is more important in the postseason?
Well, there you go.
Offense
I mean,
defense?
That says offense is.
I think that's what it says.
Yeah, and the Chargers are number 11. They're just out of the top 10. So, that's, you know, hey, when the game's over, score points are king. You know, you got to score points to do it. And that's where this sits. It's interesting, too, though, because Dallas statistically is the best defense. But I think you and I both agree the Colts are the ones that are playing good now.
Last 11 games.
Because they stunk early in the season. They were 1-5, and they weren't giving up that many. And then, as you said, they started to get hot, and they found themselves. Now they're playing better than most of the defenses, I think, that we're seeing.
But offense is more important, right?
Overall, I think you got to think, but, yeah.
Let's just review.
It looks that way.
Let me just tell you, this is what happened last week. It's wild card round. The Colts won 21-7, gave up 7 points to the Houston Texans, right? The Cowboys gave up 22 to Seattle, beat them 24-22. The Chargers beat Baltimore and gave up 17 points. And the Eagles beat Chicago, gave up 15 points. Defense kind of carried the day last Sunday, Saturday and Sunday in the wildcard round.
Well, nobody was really playing an offense that they were really scared of, except that Baltimore had the number 9 offense overall, and they got into a tussle with
And they scored 15 points.
Yeah,
I guess
they scored 15
if
points.
Defense is not important, how do you account for the results from last Sunday?
Yeah, I think last
Saturday and Sunday.
And I was thinking this too. If you add up the rankings, see where these teams rank together, and if you do that, you know the Chargers look really good when you do that. The Rams look really good when you do that. All these other teams, not so much. They're all kind of they got one side of the ball that carries them. But when you get into a total team, you look at those teams that kind of rank both that are pretty high. The Chargers come, filter to the top of that. They're playing really well on both sides of the ball. So maybe there's something there when they walk into New England.
I think defense matters more now than it does in the regular season.
Are you one of those that says just because they're good, or is it like are you one of those like, well, it's late in the year, it's November, it's windy, it's cold, all of that? Is that? Because I don't.
Oh, I don't. What? Why defense matters?
Yeah. Or why defense kind of takes a step forward late in the year? It seems like always they do.
Yeah, I don't think it has much to do with the weather. It's just you're not challenged to put up a ton of points if the other team doesn't score a lot of points. It's kind of basic. It's kind of elementary. But boy, if you're giving up 15 points like some of these teams did, like Chicago scored 15.
Yeah.
You can beat a team. I mean, the Bills can win games if they hold their opponents to 15 points, right?
Yeah.
As bad as the Buffalo offense was, 15 points is nothing in today's NFL.
It's interesting, too. I told you this. Half the teams in the wild card round, none of them scored 25 points. Nobody did. Not a single team.
17 points for Baltimore in a losing effort last week?
Nobody. Not even the winning teams scored 25 points.
Defense matters.
Nobody scored 25 points in the entire wild card weekend. None of the four games. Nobody scored 25 points. What?
How does that happen?
No, right? Because this had all the L.A. Maybe that's the reason, because none of the top offenses had to play over wild card weekend. All these people are scratching
Saints,
and clawing their way
Rams,
in.
Rams, Chiefs.
Chiefs,
yeah.
Right? And the Patriots, who are the number 5 offense in the league.
Maybe that was the JV last week.
Ooh.
Maybe that was the JV tournament.
Maybe. But, well, nobody could score points.
All right, there's this. We got to talk about this. And, by the way, you can phone in your thoughts which road team has the best chance of an upset this weekend. We got phone lines open for the next couple of minutes here. 803-0550, toll-free, 1-888-552-550. A lot of Bills fans, many of those on Twitter, talking about Antonio Brown. Some interesting comments from Art Rooney II, Pittsburgh Steelers team president, told the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette that as far as that talented wide receiver Antonio Brown, quote, he won't be released, but all other options are on the table regarding his future. Rooney told the Post-Gazette it would be, quote, hard to envision Brown as part of the Steelers when they go to training camp in late July. Now, don't expect a trade. That can't happen until after the new league year begins March 13th, but his roster bonus due March 17th would kind of make it difficult to make a trade. But Bills fans wonder, Antonio Brown, possible fit for the Bills? The quotes from Rooney were interesting. Not much we can do right now. We have time to make a decision. We'll look at all the options. We're not going to release him. That's not on the table, but all other options are on the table. And he went on to say, whether the situation can be reconciled and have him back on the team next year, we're a long way away from thinking that can happen. We're not closing the door on anything on this at this
We're
point.
We're a long way from the point that thinking that we can have him back on our team next year.
Yeah.
They're a long way from – they don't think that can happen at this point. That's
First,
amazing.
Can I just say this? I don't mean to be you know, Pollyanna-ish. What a shame. What a shame that one of the best, if not the best receiver in the game, has essentially talked his way and misbehaved his way off that very fine Pittsburgh roster, right? Can I just say that? Does that sound kind of – I just think it's terrible that a player would do that. You're on a successful team, a perennial playoff contender, a team that has a shot to win championships. You got one of the best quarterbacks in the game, and you have just – ruined it. And now they're looking at you like, well, we can't have this guy on the roster next year. It's just terrible that that happens in the NFL.
The interesting thing, and the question that I don't know the answer to, is why?
Why did this happen?
What's his problem?
I don't know.
I mean, he's been happy, seemingly happy there for a long time, and then word got out that there was some sort of flare-up, and him and Ben Roethlisberger got into an argument or whatever. You hear a lot of things. After all that, you know, who knows the truth of it all. But why is he not happy in Pittsburgh all of a sudden?
Where are you going to go and be happy?
He's making all kinds of money. He signed that deal. Now he wants to make that money and go somewhere else to play? Is that why he – did he orchestrate this whole thing? That he wants out of there? What's he doing?
I don't know.
He's on one he's at the organization that has won more championships or as many championships as anybody and is expected to be in the contention for one every year.
Every year.
Why are you wanting out of there? Because, listen, they don't put up with it. It does not surprise me that the Rooneys will say, you know what, we're a good franchise. We're going to be good with or without him. They did it with Le'Veon Bell already.
Yep. Makes it, I mean, if you're the Buffalo Bills in desperate need of wide receiving help, you got to look at it. But I think he's disqualified himself from here or any team that cares about chemistry on the roster and culture, you know, a cultural fit on the roster, right?
Well, here's the thing.
He's already declared himself ineligible for any team like that.
Unless you get him in, and which the Bills will probably do, and so will the other team, they'll get him in and go face-to-face with him and say, what happened? And if he can explain it away and prove to them, it wasn't me, it was something else, it was here's why I reacted the way I did, here's my problem with what happened, here's what was going on in Pittsburgh, and it's a revelation to the people who are asking the question, the Bills or the Cleveland Browns or the Jets or the Dolphins or the Patriots, whoever, if he can convince them that the story is plausible, that it was not him, it's not just him being a bad guy, well, he's very sought after, but he comes with a big price tag.
Right.
So he doesn't. Maybe he can undisqualify himself as a culture fit in a team for a team like Buffalo.
Terrible. I hate to see that happen.
It's amazing that happens.
All right, let's play a little NFL True and False now. It is brought to you by Yancey's Fancy, New York's artisan cheese. NFL True and False. Number one, the Bills should sign Thomas Davis, former Carolina Panthers, longtime linebacker there, 14-year veteran, hasn't played for anybody else. He said yesterday that Carolina's going in a different direction at the linebacking position. Davis will not be Carolina. He is an unrestricted free agent when the league year begins in March, 35 years old. The Bills should sign him. Well, true or false? I don't know how to answer it. I would say false right when free agency opens. If we're in June and Thomas Davis is out there still and you get him at a good price, I'd look at that. But I wouldn't jump on him, Steve. He's 35 years old. Look, they have a great amount of affection, the power brokers here for Carolina Panthers players. And he's a good one. He has benefited from playing alongside Luke Kuechly for a while. But I wouldn't jump on him. I'm going to say false.
Right. I mean, like this last year, he played in 12 games, started 12 games. So, not a great year. He's 35 years old, like you said. But, you know, I don't know. If it's the right number, of course. But that's what it comes down to. I don't know that he'll have teams lined up for his services. So there's no question that even if it is the first day of free agency, if the Bills can get him for a low number, absolutely. A guy like that, and they would know if he's a culture fit. Certainly.
So yeah, they would know.
And that was it. And listen, he would be a culture signing if they're not signing him to be a difference maker at 35 years old.
How much of a culture signing is a guy who missed four games with a PED violation last year? You know what I mean? What kind of culture are we talking about?
I get you.
All right.
I get you.
So you say true or false?
I say false.
Okay, I say false as well. Part two, NFL true and false. If the Rams go one and done again, if they are eliminated tomorrow night by the Cowboys, the Sean McVay effect will lose its luster. Jim Trotter, who covers the NFL, tweeted this out. I keep being told NFL owners are looking for the next Sean McVay. Just curious, if he goes one and done in the playoffs for the second straight year, does his star lose any luster? Yes, true. Of course it does. Sean McVay has shot to the top of the charts when it comes to NFL coaching templates, right? Everybody wants, I want to get my Sean McVay. I got our Sean McVay. You know, Kingsbury is our Sean McVay. Zach Taylor going to Cincinnati, he's a Sean McVay disciple. After one successful season, one and a half now, he's shot to the top of the charts. If they get knocked out of the playoffs against the Cowboys, of course he loses its luster. Yeah, that's true.
I'll say not necessarily because, listen, it's a playoff game. A lot of things can happen. And plus, the reason he shot to the top was because he took a bad offense with a busted quarterback and fixed it overnight, seemingly, figuratively speaking. He fixed it overnight. That's why his star shines like it does. And one loss in the playoffs, listen, a lot of franchises wish they were the team that could go to the playoffs every year and have a shot at it. And if losing one game at the end of a really good season does not mean that you don't deserve to be there, you don't have better things in store for your franchise or any of that other stuff that goes along with having that. So I would say no. Certainly they'll be bitterly disappointed because this is a year, it'll be the second year in a row they did that. But when you get into the playoffs, hey, it's hard to win. And that would not take anything away from what Sean McVay has already done for the Rams.
All right. And finally, NFL true or false. This is hard to believe, but I saw the picture. Lucas Oil Stadium, Indianapolis, the home of the Indianapolis Colts. Indy 1-0 after their playoff victory against Houston last week. Headed to Kansas City for, you know, a tough game against the top seed in the AFC. Outside Lucas Oil Stadium, the Colts have raised a flag that says the Colts logo 1-0. A new 1-0 flag outside Lucas Oil Stadium in Indianapolis. Is that a bad look? True, false? Yeah, true. That's a bad look. You're 1-0 in the playoffs. You won a wild card game. It's not like this franchise hasn't accomplished anything else. 16 division titles, two Super Bowl victories in Colts history, 7 conference championships, NFL championships before the merger. A flag with 1-0 on it? Come on, man. Does somebody have a brother-in-law that runs a flag company or what?
Yeah.
Come on.
I agree.
That's a bad look. True.
I think that is a true. That's a bad look. I mean... What are you doing?
Do they have the 2-0 flag ready to go if they happen to win?
They might. I mean, it's a thing now, right? 2-0, right? I mean, like the other, you know, the other 10 games they won, or 9 or 11 games, whatever it was that they won,
that's crazy.
Meaningless now. They go away. I'm with you. I think it is. It's a bad look. They're 10-6 in the regular season, 1-0 in the playoffs, and it's not time. It is the absolute worst time to raise a flag.
Yeah.
Saying 1-0.
See what they do this week. They might win. Steve thinks they're going to win.
I think they're going to win. Yeah. And somebody just informed us on Twitter that the Chargers are the lowest underdog. They're 4-point underdog to the Patriots, and that's the smallest spread on the over the weekend. So.
That's where the upset is. I'm looking at. And again, you are right. You called me out right off the bat at 12:03 this afternoon. A lot of it is wishful thinking. I would love it if the Patriots just got eliminated as soon as the playoffs begin.
Yeah.
Love it.
I think everybody's looking for it to happen, but there's nothing that tells me that it's going to.
All right, we'll see. A break here. We're back with more. One Bills Live from One Bills Drive. This is Buffalo Bills Radio. Well, here we go. What do we learn from today's show? It is brought to you by Advanced Alarm, providing Western New York's homes and businesses with the finest in security and home theater, the preferred alarm and home theater provider of the Buffalo Bills. What did we learn today? We had a pretty good show that focused a lot on the playoffs and on some of the coaching searches. We talked with Greg Cosell, executive producer, analyst of NFL matchup on ESPN, and he gave us his insight into the Chargers matchup against the Patriots, that game coming up on Sunday at 1.
You know, I think the Patriots' offense is a lot different than we've come to expect. I mean, they have not been very good on third down this year, which is very rare. Tom Brady's third down numbers are poor compared to previous years, and they're actually in the bottom half of the league. You know, the Patriots have become kind of a running team in which they line up with a fullback, Devlin, so they play a lot with what we call 21 personnel, two backs. They're going to end up playing a lot when they go to 11 personnel with three wide. What the Chargers do is they play with six defensive backs. That's kind of their MO. The Chargers have played with six defensive backs on well over 50% of their snaps this year. So that's how they play. That's how they roll.
That's Greg Cosell. That's how he rolls. Seriously, a lot of insight there in a 30-second soundbite. Also today, we had J.P. Lossman on the show. Remember him? Former quarterback for the Bills, first-round draft pick. He just wrapped up his second season as an intern coach on the staff at Clemson University, the new national champions at Clemson. J.P. Lossman talked to us about being an intern coach with the Clemson Tigers this year.
Oh, I absolutely love it. Yeah, definitely going to stick with it. I'm having a great time. I mean, I haven't won this much in my entire life, so it's the winning is a lot of fun, and so it's contagious. And coming to work every day with working with someone like Coach Sweeney is just awesome. He's authentic. He's genuine. You know, he's honest, and the entire coaching staff is. They're all open books to me, and it's been a great start to coaching.
Good talking to J.P. Lossman today. Hey, Steve, I got to go back to the beginning of the show. We were talking about basketball, and you were talking about your experience 19 years ago when the tournament first came to Buffalo. My buddy Ron Bertovich, who was also part of that committee.
Berto
says, tell Steve it was called Time to Hoop 2000.
Oh, sorry.
Bobby Knight in Indiana lost to Pepperdine in the first round. I remember that. At his post-game presser, Coach Knight called the Buffalo site, quote, the best run NCAA setup he had ever been to, all because Steve Tasker was our leader.
Yeah, right. He didn't say that.
Bobby Knight on your side. How about it?
Bobby Knight did not say. He did say it was the best run venue he'd been a part of. He didn't mention my name.
But right before he left
very
Indiana.
He was very complimentary of our event. So
yes.
That's why we got it back, probably, guys like him.
Over and over again.
Yeah.
All right, have a great weekend, everybody.
You too,
Steve. Production assistants, George Blass, Jeff Koltnick, Thomas Hollander, Kelly Rude, J.J. Torito, Kevin Cardis, James Robola, producer Jay Harris. We will see you Monday at 12 noon with One Bills Live, presented by Kalina Health from One Bills Drive. And this is Buffalo Bills Radio.